Kedevadari. Yasodanandana Brajajanarandana Chasodanandana Brajajanarandana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivadari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivadari Yasodanandana Brajajanarandana Yasodanandana Brajajanarandana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parivratikacharya, Asatara Satyashishimadha, Jumang Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Shilu Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Shilu Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnupadaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane. Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Paskachya Deshatarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Manchakalpatribhascha Kripa Sandhavyevacha Patichanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namah Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya December 2nd, 2021, in New Dwarka, Los Angeles. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, Questions Vidura, Text 16. Swayam Dhanurdwari Nidayamayam Bratu Puro Marmasu Taditopi Saitam Achulbana Karnabanar Do you have the wrong verse? Yes. 3160, it's definitely 3116. No, it's right there. That's in the purport. This is the same verse. Well, I'm saying 3116. I don't know what to say. All right. I'll just read it. There we go. That's it. All right. Should we try again? Swayam Dhanur Dwari Nidhayam Ayam. Pratu Puro Marmasutaditopi. Saitam Alyubana Karnabanayar. Katavyacho Yadurumana Yana. Please chant. Ladies. Swayam, he himself, Dhanu Dwari, bow on the door, Nidaya, keeping, Mayam, the external nature, Bratuhu, brothers, Puraha, from the palace, Marmasu, in the core of the heart, Taditata, being afflicted, api, in spite of, saha, he, vidura, itam, like this, ati ulbana, severely,
karna, ear, vanai, by the arrows. Gatavyataha, without being sorry. Ayat, excited. Uru, great. Manayanaha, so thinking. So we end at 8:30 with questions. So is that the idea is that the class plus questions is over at 8:30? Is that correct? The class plus questions is to be over at 8:30? Is that? Okay. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Now, this is a very significant verse because it's holding two apparently opposite things together. And it's a very important verse because all of us are in situations more or less like the situation that Vidura is in at this particular point. All of us come to these situations in our life. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears, were those literal arrows? Were those physical arrows? Words. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears, and afflicted to the core of the heart. So the words went where? Into his ears and to his heart. Vidura placed his bow on the door. How many of you thought of Vidura as walking around with bows and arrows? Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So what are our two apparently opposite things happening here? Yeah? External and internal energy. Yes. What's another apparently paradoxical thing happening here? He wasn't sorry, yet he was. At the same time that he wasn't sorry, he was also... He was, how afflicted was he? Just moderately, like, oh, it wasn't very good. Extremely. It went all the way to his heart. And it felt like an arrow. That's pretty severe, right? I mean, I don't know. In this life, I never had an arrow in my heart. But I would assume that it's extremely painful. So he has a figurative arrow in his heart, and yet he's not sorry. And the arrow that's in his heart is greatly afflicting him. And yet he's not sorry. Interesting, isn't it? Srila Prabhupada's purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward situation created by the external energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 3:27, it is stated, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankaravi mudhatma kartaha miti manyate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in false ego. We were saying we should call ISKCON false ego anonymous, right? We're all coming here to get rid of our addiction to our false ego. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he's doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord. And the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord. But due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under such influence of the external nature, by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Have you ever been insulted when you were giving well-wishing advice to somebody you cared about? Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path towards his own ruination. Right, do you remember what Duryodhan said to him in the previous verse? And what did he threaten him with? Beat him with only his breath. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him with only his breath. So So he was threatened like this. Beat him until he's barely alive. That's pretty heavy, insulting words. So he, Vidura, therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme, yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. So he's seeing Duryodhan's being influenced by the external energy. And he's saying, but there's also Krishna's internal energy working here. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. So if a devotee is even in a very opulent royal situation, the temperament of a devotee is always renounced. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the place and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana. Interesting. And instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyata, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man and get entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. So that's what he normally did, obviously. Thus, he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally. Swayam dhanar dari nidhayamayam bratu puro marmasu taditopi sa itam atyulbana karnabanayar gata vyato yad uru manayanaha. Thus, being pierced by, and let's really think about this. Can we each think of some time when we were pierced by arrows of harsh words through our ears and afflicted to the core of our heart? Who here has ever had that situation happen at least once in your life? Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So everybody would like to be equipoised in painful situations. Everybody, even materialistic people, would like to be able to remain unaffected. Because generally when we become affected, we lose our intelligence. And especially with harsh words, isn't it? And especially harsh words from family or friends. You know, harsh words from some random person on the street isn't going to affect us so much. But harsh words from family, even family that you know is not so nice, isn't it? I mean, Vidura knew that Duryodhana wasn't such a nice person. He might have just said, well, typical for Duryodhana, what do you expect from Duryodhana, and brushed it off. But we see that when it comes to family or close friends or close association or within our devotional family, even if we know that somebody's a little funny, still, if they harshly insult us, it's very painful. Right? We have a concept that family, close associates are people who are not going to really hurt us. Right? It's like in a family, your family members may know your bank account passwords. They know the key codes to your door. They share a key to your house. You sleep in the same house with them. You don't think they're going to get up and kill you in the middle of the night and steal your money, and right? Isn't it? Even a family member who's a little funny. We feel like that. I can trust these people. It's sort of built into our biology. We're herd animals. We're social animals. It's very hard for us to live without other humans. It's not like we can all just be Robinson Crusoe. You know, so another human being who's close to us, who's helping us to get food and water and shelter, if they threaten us, our physiology, our biology becomes alerted. Does this make sense to everybody? Like you're walking down the street, a dog barks at you and the danger system lights up in the brain. And the same thing happens if somebody who's your family member, who lives with you, who you have to trust to some extent, threatens you or says something nasty to you. It may even be a slight threat. It may just be, oh, I don't really think I can come to your birthday party today. You know, I got some. Even something like that may go, oh my God, this, maybe I can't trust this person. And we can become frightened. The danger system, the brain sets up the danger system. Warning, warning, warning. You may be in danger. You may be in danger. And of course, this comes originally from the fact that in our original position as a soul, we have family and associates. It's interesting. Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna likes to be addressed as Yasoda Nandana and Devaki Nandana, Nandanandana. He says because the bodily connection is very pleasing. And the gopis say this to Krishna. They say, we know you've forgotten about us in Mathura, but how can you forget about your parents? How can you forget about your family? So there's something original in the spiritual nature that we have some sense that these are my people. Right? And of course, Arjuna went through this on the battlefield, my swajana, my people. So harsh words, especially from our people, isn't it? I mean, if it's just some random person in a store or whatever, you know, but my people. And these words, Krishna explains to Uddhava in 11:23:3, he says, sharp arrows, so you have again this arrows, sharp arrows which pierce one's chest and reach the heart, do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. That's 11:23:3. It's practically that verse that Krishna speaks to Uddhava is exactly describing this situation by Vidura. Sound is powerful. Sound is so powerful that it completely discombobulates our mind, our consciousness, our awareness. In the verse before that one, Krishna says, please listen, because this is one of those verses, you hear it and you go, oh, I'm finished. You ever have those verses, you read them and you go, sheesh, no hope for me. Krishna says, there is virtually no saintly man, the word he uses is sadhu, in this world, capable of resettling his own mind after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. Virtually no sadhu. So we might think, my phone thought I was talking to it. So we might think, well, if I become a sadhu, it just won't bother me anymore. Krishna says, no, even if you're a sadhu, you won't be able to resettle your mind. We can think about it. I mean, again, if we think back to the last time that somebody said something to us, especially someone that we felt we depended on or we had some relationship of trust or some connection with, and they said something to us that acted like this arrow through the ear into the heart, and our mind became... And it was hard to resettle our mind, to get back our intelligence, to get back our memory. And we get scared because we know that if we respond to that, then we end up in trouble too, right? You know, okay, Urmila, you know, you know that when your mind is so unsettled by harsh words, if you open up your mouth and you do anything, you're going to cause a problem too, right? Isn't it? Just better be quiet. Go someplace. You know, walk away. And even you try to take up your beads and the mind is just not settling, isn't it? It's just... Sometimes I feel like all the nerves in my body are on a trampoline. And we think, well, someday I'll be Krishna conscious and that won't happen to me anymore. But Krishna says, no. Even if you're a sadhu, these words are going to act like arrows into the ear, to the heart. We'll get there. And you won't be able to settle your mind. So now that everybody's thoroughly discouraged. So this fact indicates the power of sound, doesn't it? And therefore, it gives us some hope. And one of my favorite verses, Sachinanda Maharaj likes this verse. I think they even have a sweatshirt with it. 7:15:42. Danurhitasya pranavam patati saram tu jivam padameva laksham. The mantra is the bow, the jiva is the arrow, the target is God. That if we, using the mantra, shoot ourselves as an arrow toward the Supreme, then we attain the perfection of life. So how is it that Vidura experienced this? And he genuinely experienced it. This isn't just, whatever, it's Duryodhana, Oh, well. He genuinely experienced this unsettling. And yet he was not sorry. And yet he had the intelligence to know what to do and to see Krishna behind it and not to get swallowed by that same external energy. He was able to see what's afflicting me is the external energy. Let me take shelter of the internal energy. So how did he do this? I was thinking about the fact that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God who takes the role of a devotee and shows us how to act as a devotee. And it's explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj that Mahaprabhu has three general states of consciousness. Does anyone know what they are? Yes. Thank you. Internal, mixed, and external. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in internal consciousness, can you give me an example of a lila when Mahaprabhu was in internal consciousness? Rathiyatra. Yes, when else? And the Gambira. When he fell in the ocean. Right? Or when his limbs went in like a turtle. Did he have any awareness of anything other than his meditation? No, nothing. And we can think about sage like Samakarishi, who did he have any awareness that Maharaj Parikit was insulting him? No awareness at all. So in full internal consciousness, when the devotee is totally meditating on the Supreme and the pastimes, then there's no affliction because there's no awareness. There's no, you don't even know anybody insulted you. You don't know somebody put a dead snake around your neck. You just don't even know what happened because you're someplace else. And even materially, we experience this sometimes, isn't it? We're so absorbed in something that we just didn't. In fact, the example's given, I think, in the 11th canto of the, again, we have an arrow, the arrow maker, that he's so much making his arrow straight, he doesn't notice the king's retinue passing by. But can we function in the world in internal consciousness? Could you drive a car? I mean, it's interesting in 12.2 purport, Prabhupada says the devotee, sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears about Krishna, sometimes he goes to the market to purchase things, and he's always in a state of 12.2, Bhagavad Gita purport. Samadhi. How do you drive a car in samadhi? You get a transcendental DUI, right? I was driving absorbed and Krishna playing with the cowherd boys. I didn't see the cars. Didn't hear the horns. So that must be a different kind of samadhi, huh? And then there's external consciousness. Just like when Mahaprabhu saw Ramananda Roy and they were embracing, and then he noticed there were these critical brahmanas, caste brahmanas around, and he came to external consciousness. Or generally, except for when he's in the Rathiyatra dancing, but generally when the devotees come from Bengal, Mahaprabhu for those 4 months would stay primarily in external consciousness. Now, when you're in external consciousness, you are going to be aware and you're going to be afflicted. Then there's mixed internal, external. You're somewhat aware of the world and you're somewhat absorbed in meditation. Now, of course, even when the devotees, and this is very important, are in external consciousness, they never lose awareness of Krishna. Rupa Goswami describes this very clearly in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. when he talks about the different Vyavichari bhavs in the Southern Ocean, that would be, I think, the fourth wave. And he talks about the different sattvika bhavs, which is the second wave, where pure devotees, and he gives examples even of Mother Yasoda, of Srimati Radharani, they may experience emotions which initially are not connected with Krishna, but then they connect them with Krishna. An example given of Mother Yasoda is she had a dream that Putana was inside her house at night. And she felt fear that wasn't related to Krishna. It was just related to Putana's in my house at night. That would be pretty scary, right? You wake up at night, Putana's in your house. But then she immediately thought, what about Krishna? She immediately took it to Krishna. So even when the devotees are in external consciousness, everything goes to Krishna, which is what Vidura does here. He feels he's aware of the affliction in his heart, like sharp arrows. But then he takes it to Krishna. He brings his consciousness, because it's always there, even in external consciousness, what to speak in mixed external, internal. That basis of consciousness of Krishna and love of Krishna and trust in Krishna never goes away. For the materialist, it's not even there. And so the materialist, like Duryodhan, is just carried along on the waves of their different emotions and desires. They're always unsettled, isn't it? Materialistic people are always unsettled. They're never peaceful. But to the devotee, even when the mind and the body become unsettled, they're able to take it to Krishna. And this is so nicely explained. One of my favorite verses, Bhagavad Gita 14:22-25. One who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active. Doesn't that sound like what Vidura is doing? Remaining neutral. And Prabhupada says in that purport, as long as we're in this world, as long as we have a body, the external energy is going to be there. Sometimes our body and mind are going to be afflicted by tamagun. Sometimes our body and mind are going to be afflicted by rajagun. Sometimes they're going to be afflicted by sattvagun, which is also an affliction, by the way. Sometimes when I quote that verse, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, and someone says, why wouldn't you long for illumination? But sattvagun is also false ego. So the devotee sees, where's Krishna here? Where's Krishna here? And I'm sure we also have experience that when a person's really afflicted, philosophy doesn't penetrate. Have you all had that experience? Someone's really, really afflicted, and you try to speak philosophy to them, and they just become angry or frustrated. And we may have had that experience with ourselves too. If we're in this state of full affliction, that arrows are in our heart, and somebody comes and speaks for, well, it's Krishna's mercy. We're like, get out of here. Krishna's mercy. Go away. But there is something that can give us solace even when we're not capable of processing philosophy. Because although everybody wants to be equipoised in difficulty, everybody, even materialistic people, would like to be equipoised in difficulty, we also all want to experience strong emotions. Otherwise, we're not alive. That's why people go to the movies. It's why they go to sporting events. It's why they go to political rallies. It's why they argue about vaccines on the internet forever. Because people want to experience strong emotions. It says in the preface of Nectar Devotion, that everything everyone does is motivated by rasa. And even negative, so-called negative emotions are also rasa. There's a whole section in the fifth wave of the Southern Ocean where Rupa Goswami explains how the transcendental fear and disgust are also ecstasy. We don't want to be just like the Buddhists and the impersonalists. I am not affected by attachment and aversion. I am equipoised in happiness, distress, fame and infamy, honor, dishonor, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, friends, enemies, neutral. We don't want to stop there, that I'm just neutral. We want to feel the Vyavichari bhavs. We want to feel the secondary sthayi bhavs. We want to feel intense spiritual emotion. We don't want to just go to some detached philosophical place. Well, this is Krishna's arrangement. I don't have to fight with my bow and arrow anymore. Let me put it by the door and take Vanaprastha. Good opportunity. I've been looking for it for a long time. You know, that's what Prabhupada talks about in the purport. But that's not the only thing. One becomes absorbed in spiritual emotion. Vidura is turning to spiritual emotion. He loves Krishna. He's not just a great learned sage and philosopher. He loves Krishna. And he feels emotions in relationship to Krishna. All the emotions we feel in this world have their archetype in Krishna. And so Vidura didn't just feel a mundane affliction. He felt a hankering for Krishna. Does that make sense? It wasn't just, oh, my family members insulted me, I may get beaten to death, I may not get anything to eat anymore, which is what we feel when we're afflicted. It's like, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And even in the most distressed emotional state, anybody who knows anything about Krishna can turn their awareness to Krishna. So this is predicated on knowing something about Krishna. This is not a technique we can teach people on the street. We can teach people on the street, you know, well, you can step back, as Prabhupada saying here, Prakriti Kriyamana Nigunai Karmani Sarvasha. We can teach people that. That's 327 Bhagavad Gita. Become detached from attachment and aversion. But until you've read Krishna book, until you've read the Bhagavatam, until you've read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, until you know something about Krishna, it's very hard to do this. And we as bhakti yogis, we can do this. When we're afflicted, we can turn our consciousness to, how did Vidura feel? We can start going deep into his emotions. My Lord, where are you? How horrible that this demoniac person is offending your servant. How horrible this demoniac person is turning against you. His affliction becomes for Krishna. And when we go deep into those emotions, the material emotions dissipate like fog in the sun. We don't even notice that they've gone away as we become so absorbed in the spiritual emotions of which these material emotions are a reflection. So any time that this happens to us, and it will happen to us over and over again in this world, that is absolutely guaranteed. I make you a guarantee that we will have this unsettling of emotions, even if we are sadhus. Krishna says it, and I'm just going to accept that he's telling the truth. I'm going to make it simple. God says it must be true. As long as I'm in this world, my body and mind will be unsettled by emotions, unless I can be in some deep internal consciousness where I don't even notice what's going on. But I can always turn it to the spiritual emotions, even if I'm too unsettled to turn it to spiritual philosophy. I can always go to the spiritual emotions. I'm grieving for the loss of someone dear to me. I can meditate, how did Arjuna feel about the death of Abhimanyu? I'm grieving that I'm separated from somebody. How did the residents of Vrindavan feel when Krishna was in Mathura? The other day, somebody was supposed to do something and they made a bunch of excuses and I was really annoyed. And I thought, this is how the residents of Vrindavan, how do they feel when Krishna says, I can't come back from Mathura, I have more demons to kill. And how they felt. And as I meditated more and more and more on the emotions of the residents of Vrindavan, I forgot all my annoyance on the material level with this other jiva. And in that way, one is never sorry. Because anything in this world, anyone, any time, any place, any circumstance, any stimulus in this world can bring us to Krishna. Even if we have a moment where we're not there, then the next moment, there we are with Krishna. And then we see, as Prabhupada writes in the purport to Gita 15:15, God is all good, God is all merciful. One devotee wrote me some months ago. She had been in excellent health, no problem, and then something happened, and she was in great difficulty and had to go to the hospital and all these problems and complications. And she said, I did everything right. Why did this happen? I said, I don't know the specific reason why this happened. I said, someday you'll know. Someday Krishna will reveal specifically why this happened. I said, but the general reason why it happened, we always know, and that is love. And so the devotee goes to there. Bhaktaram Yagatapasam Sarvalok Maheshram Suridam Sarvabhutanam. It is my best friend who's the controller. Yet from Amshanting Richati, and therefore one can actually attain peace. So I'm sorry, I did go all the way to 8:30. And this young man had a couple questions. At least he raised his hand a couple times. Do you still have a question? Yes?
Thank you for the wonderful class. But before you get into discussion or questions, we have some bittersweet news.
Oh. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I mean, think about the song by Narottama Das Thakur, Ani Lo Premandan. Yes, Prabhu. Well, first for this young man here, because he had his hand up during the class. Can we get this gentleman here a mic? What is your name? What's your name? Abhay. Abhaya. Okay, we're going to remember the at the end. Just say your question, I'll repeat it into the mic. Yes. So you're saying one time you stabbed your eye by accident with something piercing. Was it an arrow? It felt like an arrow. A knife. I'm glad you still have your eye. And it really hurt, didn't it? Have you ever had somebody say something nasty to you that hurt even more? Yeah. That's what happened to Vidura. Yeah. There you go. And it hurt, right? Yeah, like, so that's what Vidura. I mean, imagine if someone said, I'm going to kill you. And it was his family member. His family member said, I'm going to practically kill you. How much that would hurt. Yes. Thank you so much. Yes, Prabhu. Well, it's not that they ever forget Krishna, but no, even in the spiritual world, I mean, it's explained, if you study the explanation of the Vyavichari Bhavs and the different, I don't remember the Sanskrit terms right now. I've only taught this once. I don't remember the Sanskrit terms. I'm sorry. But there's a type of Vyavichari Bhav. Prabhupada calls it moist, burnt, and dried up. It's what Prabhupada calls burnt, but it has a particular Sanskrit term. Where the devotee's initial emotion is not connected to Krishna, but it immediately connects with Krishna. But they never lose their consciousness of Krishna and their love for Krishna. So he gives examples even of Mother Yasoda and Srimati Radharani. And he's giving examples even in the spiritual world. They always have love for Krishna. It's always there. They always have the term Rupa Goswami is using it there is Rati. Well, you could also understand that to mean rasa. So that never goes away. But they still have emotions that come that they then connect with Krishna. Yes. Yes. He goes to drive. He goes to pull Hastinapur into the Ganges. Yeah. Yes. Yes, Balaram did feel that emotion of anger. In fact, that very example is given by Rupa Goswami. There's transcendental anger. But the 33 Vyavichari Bhavs and the 7 secondary Stai Bhavs, which are all emotions, spiritual emotions, they're in their pure form because they're based on love and not malice. Our anger is basically coming from our false ego and our sense that my false ego identity is being threatened in some way. And we lose our intelligence when we get angry. We lose our memory, we lose our intelligence. This is one reason why in the Bhagavatam, when there's a battle, they insult each other first. You ever notice that? Remember there's this battle, they insult each other first? I always wonder, why do they do that? Well, first of all, even if you came to fight, once you get on the battlefield, you might hesitate. You might say, do I really want to risk my right arm for this battle? And when you're insulted, it makes you angry and then you want to fight. Also, when you're insulted, it makes you angry, and when you're angry, you lose your intelligence, and therefore you're going to be easier to defeat. How you throw your enemy off guard, you insult them. And in their anger, they don't remember their fighting skills and all that, and they lose it. By the way, I meant to bring this up in the class itself. Lord Varaha, it says, was disturbed by the abusive words of the demon Hiranyaka. And Prabhupada says there the Lord is a person. And he has feelings. Prabhupada says he has feelings. But the Lord's feelings are all blissful. You can see a materialist even like to make themselves angry. That's why they go to sporting events. Why do people pay whatever they pay to go to sporting events? Or why do they go to political rallies? Or why do they make constant propaganda of this or that position on the internet? Because they're trying to enjoy anger. But only spiritual anger is enjoyable. So if you're angry at Kaliya because he's wrapped up Krishna, that's ecstasy. And Krishna also sometimes enjoys anger. The gopis get angry a lot, you know. You were supposed to come. Why didn't you come? I saw you looking at that other gopi. And they're enjoying it. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Excellent. Please, can you read it from Krishna book? Just read it, yes. Which? Why are the devotees of Lord Vishnu poor and the devotees of Lord Vishnu? So this is the one that when Krishna loves you, he takes everything away? That's what you were going to read? Yes. Or impious activities. Yes. What I found is that kind of instruction. that the poverty and wealth of the devotee is arranged by Krishna, everything is done for the benefit of the devotee, is very helpful right now when I'm sitting here and I'm peaceful. And it's very helpful if I'm taking an air of superiority and preaching to someone else who's afflicted. You know, I'm like, hey, look, this is all Krishna, and they're like, well, get up, you know, what's your problem? Get over it. It's not particularly helpful when I'm afflicted. That's what I, not in that moment. In that moment, again, Krishna says this, there is virtually no sadhu in this world capable of resettling his own mind, after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. So how do we resettle our mind with philosophy? And it doesn't work. But it works with pure bhakti. So when you go to this is my experience, not only from my own life, but with counseling and helping, you know, thousands of people over so many years. When you're in the middle of it, you turn to the emotions of bhakti, and then you can look at it philosophically. Or if you're not able to turn to the emotions of bhakti because you don't know enough about Krishna to do that, then at least you can move back and take a position of observer and say, this is the external energy. It's not me. And you let the emotions pass through you. An example that I give there is like if you're talking to somebody and a very big, noisy truck goes past, you pause your conversation while the truck goes past. So if there's something unsettling, you just observe it and wait for it to pass. You don't grab it. You don't repress it, and you don't grab it. So that you can tell even to a new people. And Krishna says in 2:64, Bhagavad Gita, if you practice becoming free from attachment and aversion and you regulate your senses, you'll get Bhagavad Prasad. That doesn't mean breakfast, which we're about to have, but it means that Krishna helps you. So even for a beginner who doesn't know stories about Krishna and can't bring themselves to the spiritual emotions, you can always step back and say, oh, that's the external energy. I mean, I just did this a couple days ago or something. I don't even remember what it was anymore. Something happened and I could feel the unsettling and the affliction. And I just said, oh, that's the external energy. And I just didn't grab it. I didn't say, I have a right to be upset. And I didn't say, I don't have a right to be upset. I just said, the body's upset right now. Okay, fine. And within, I mean, even the medical science says within 90 seconds, it's gone. So you can do that. But that's something that even the impersonalists and the voidists can do. But if you do that, you don't get to experience what we also want to experience, which is emotions. We don't want to just be detached. It's not enough. And if we just try to be detached, we'll jump back into the material emotions. So we need a way to connect with the spiritual emotions. But I found those sort of philosophical things help us after the mind is settled. Once you've either just let it go through you because you're detached or because you've gone to Krishna, then you can look at it and say, oh yeah, Krishna did this for my benefit. But at the time, at least my experience is it doesn't work. And that's what I'm hearing Krishna tell to Uddhava. That's not going to work. Don't try that. It won't work. But what will work is becoming absorbed in the spiritual emotions. And then once you do that, the material emotions disappear. They're just gone. That happens also if you're just detached. But it's a lot nicer for them to dissipate because you're attached to something better than for them just to dissipate. If you've ever shopped on a fast day, any of you ever been foolish like me and gone grocery shopping when you're fasting? So I remember once grocery shopping when I was fasting, and the cakes in the bakery, which normally have no appeal to me, on that day I looked at them and I said, and then I just went detached. that's Maya. It's got eggs in it. It's not offered to Krishna. And so the feeling passed. But wouldn't it have been better if I had, you know, not been fasting and had a prasadam cake in my pocket? Right? Is that all right? But that philosophy is very good. But again, in that moment, I found it doesn't do... You had this experience? Yes? In that moment. And if you try to preach to someone in that moment, you try to pull out Krishna book. This person insulted me and they said that. I can't believe they said that. And I helped them. Why aren't they grateful? You know, let me take out Krishna book for you, Prabhu. And it says here, well, the beginning platform is just step back. So as a beginner, because that's in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And I always say to people, Bhagavad Gita is the beginner book, right? Everybody agrees? Yes? Yes? Okay. You think chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita must be pretty beginner, right? This is not in the Rasalila chapters. It's in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. Become detached from, you know, let go of attachment and aversion, 264, right after the fall down sequence. Let go of attachment and aversion. Regulate your senses. You'll get Bhagavad Prasadam. Because it's part of bhakti. But it may be for the beginner who hasn't yet, they don't yet even have their, Krishna hasn't yet talked really so much about the spiritual emotions yet in the Bhagavad Gita at this point. Or talking about the rivers going into the ocean, 270. This is beginner stuff. And anyone can do it. Materialists can do this, by the way. Atheists can do this. So certainly we can do this. This thing of, I'm not advanced enough. I don't buy it. And I'll tell you an example of this. I was in Mayapur Dham a few years ago, and a devotee was very, very upset at something another devotee had done or said. And he was raging, and there was a person trying to philosophize him to no avail, and he was just raging even more at the person trying to philosophize him. So I didn't even know this person, and I was just passing by, and I said, wow, there's a lot of anger going through you. I said, imagine that the anger is another being and just see it as part of the external energy of the Lord. It's just the energy of the, this anger is just the energy of the Lord. Like that. He was fine. Instant. And then we could go to philosophy. So anybody can do that. However, that is not an ultimately satisfying platform. If that's one's only technique, It's not sustainable in the long run because we want rasa. So if you know enough, which you obviously do, to know exactly where to go in Krishna book and find something for this class, then you also know enough to find some corresponding emotion in Krishna book to whatever emotion materially is going through your body and mind. And therefore, yes, you are advanced enough to do that because that's all it takes. All it takes is whatever emotions are going through our body and mind, so-called positive, so-called negative, that may be afflicting us. When we then, where is this in the transcendence? And then meditate not on the plot, but meditate on the emotion. What emotion is Rohini feeling that she can't share the joys of raising Lord Balaram with Vasudev? What emotion is Vasudev feeling that he has to kind of secretly hear about his children in Vrindavan? He can't watch them grow up. He can't participate in them. What emotion is Devaki feeling when she's carrying child after child she knows that Kamsa is going to kill? What emotions are the residents of Vrindavan feeling? And Prabhupada says if we can access that even to a minute degree, we are successful. So that is our special facility in bhakti that those in karma yoga, gyan yoga, and jnana yoga do not have. And I need to end now because now we want to get the other kind of Bhagavad Prasanna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Vidura's example ki jai.